Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number 2 live right here on this Thursday on the early line on Sports Grid. I am Ben Stevens. Donnie is here as well, of course, and now joining us from the very jump to start off this second hour, it's our coach, James Young, JY. The first of 5 exhibition games for Team USA as they get ready to chase the gold medal at the Paris Olympic Games on the hardwood. We'll look back on last night in Las Vegas against the Canadians and, of course, the change to the roster made yesterday. Kawhi Leonard is home. Derek White is now in. So much to get to here, JY, and we'll dive deep into the 5-game slate we saw yesterday on camp day in the WNBA. Thanks for being here on this Thursday morning.
Good morning, guys. Good to be on with you. And yes, it's amazing that we're in July and there's still so much to talk about in the world of basketball.
So, JY, we got the news late in our show yesterday, the big development that Kawhi Leonard was leaving Team USA, would not be there as a member of the roster at the Paris Olympic Games. Here is the statement from Kawhi from Team USA Basketball. Kawhi has been ramping up for the Olympics over the past several weeks and had a few strong practices in Las Vegas. He felt ready to compete. However, he respects that USA Basketball in the Clippers determined it's in his best interest to spend the remainder of the summer preparing for the upcoming season rather than participating in the Olympic Games in Paris. First, we start with Kawhi Leonard leaving. What was your reaction? How big of a hole is this to fill for the Americans?
Well, listen, Ben, this is probably one of the best or better two-way players on this team, a guy that is a lockdown defender and someone that could score and score from three. Now, let's look at Kawhi Leonard, not the player, but Kawhi Leonard, the concern. And what is the concern? The concern, Ben, is always going to be the health. This is a guy that misses time after time, game after game. This is a guy that did not play in the postseason. This is a guy that misses time all the time, even though he played 68 games in the regular season this past year in the NBA and had a great year. But you know this, Ben. This guy misses a ton of time. So if you're a team like the Clippers and you just gave this guy a 3-year extension and he's a cornerstone of the team with Paul George leaving, maybe this isn't the worst thing for the Clippers. It's probably the best thing because you need a healthy Kawhi Leonard to be there. Now, I am shocked that he even got selected in the first place, Ben. I didn't get it. I thought that this was a kind of a reach for a guy, like I said, who can't stay healthy. But to me, right move, getting him off the team. I also wonder, Ben, was he going to start in this team? And was that going to be okay for a guy like Kawhi Leonard to say, Kawhi, you're not starting, you're coming off the bench?
Yeah, Coach, that's what I was talking about. Like, I love conspiracy theories, and, you know, it just came out of nowhere. We weren't hearing that he had a bulky knee for weeks on end here, and for him just to abruptly leave camp, leave some of those questions out there. But I tell you what wasn't questioned yesterday, Team USA is still a pretty good team without Kawhi Leonard, an 86-72 victory over Team Canada at a sold-out T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Sloppy to start, but the U.S. did gain its ground. And the one thing I was talking about, some of the quotes post-game, Coach, which I liked was, they look like they really want to hang their hat on playing great defense, and they did that versus Team Canada.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing. Listen, defense is your absolute. I've always said that as a coach. Whether you're scoring or not, your defense is something you got to hang your hat on. So what that does is if games that you're scoring well offensively, it allows you to blow teams out. But when you're not scoring or shooting the ball well or turning the ball over like Team USA was last night, it allows you to maintain your focus and then get out and transition and get run out. I think that was the key to the USA team. Listen, simply put, I have concerns. You guys know it. Rebounding is a concern, right? The three-point shooting, which was only at 30.43%, was a concern, right? But if you defend like this, it ain't going to matter how bad you are offensively because you have enough firepower offensively that you're going to score enough points. Their defensive intensity wasn't tremendous for an exhibition game, and I think that is the key thing. You hang your hat on the defensive end, and then you go from there. Offensively, even though they didn't look great, what I did like, 25 assists to 37 field goals. That means they were sharing the ball. There was sacrifice. And when you get a bunch of superstars players together, Donnie, your concern is can you sacrifice yourself for the good of the team or for the good of the country? They certainly did that last night.
Anthony Edwards, the leading scorer for the Americans last night, 13 points. Steph Curry into double figures. Drew Holiday into double figures. Anthony Davis, a double-double, 10 points and 11 boards. JY, there were two Boston Celtics that were featured in the action last night. Drew Holiday, Jason Tatum, and the replacement for Kawhi Leonard is another member of the C's. That is Derek White, officially announced yesterday after Kawhi Leonard leaves Team USA. Obviously, it's going to take this roster some time to gel, but how does Derek White fit into Team USA's pursuit of a gold medal?
Just another team guy, really good defensively, second team all NBA defensively. So, you know, this is a guy that can come off the bench that will play defense, a guy that won't care about his role, won't care about getting shots off. So it does help. Now, let's be honest, Ben. I mean, let's get our popcorn ready for training camp because there's another Celtic that wasn't happy, and that's Jaylen Brown with his Donnie Right Side conspiracy theories in full effect. So, I mean, yep. I think it's something that we'll want to watch for. But I'm going to say this, and I hope this comes out the right way. This is no disrespect to Derek White at all. He's not a better player than Jaylen Brown, but I think he may fit. And to me, just the way that Jaylen Brown reacted to not being selected makes me feel like, ready, folks, this was the right move. Because this kid may have come in and maybe wanted a little bit more time, wanted a little bit further, because he's not thought of, even though he was NBA Finals MVP, he's not thought of, right, Ben, in that top 10, top 15 category in the NBA. So he may have come in and tried to show up and show out. So I honestly think, if it went the other way and Jaylen Brown got in and Derek White didn't get in, Derek White wouldn't have said a dang word. He just would have accepted it and moved on. I actually think, Ben, it was the right decision to go with Derek White.
If we do take a look at this team overall, right? You saw the game yesterday with the statistics. They're pretty even here. Most of the guys got a similar amount of minutes just to get that run on the court and see where they fit in. Come Olympic time, and let's just say the knockout stages, who are we leaning on with Team USA? Like, who's going to be logging the most minutes? And also, who is going to be that go-to guy down the stretch with all of these superstars? Somebody has to have that basketball.
Well, I'm going to say this. If you take the starting lineup from last night, we'll see what happens when Durant gets healthy. The one thing I would say is this. The game flipped early once Ant Edwards got on the floor. And he came out aggressive. He came out really saying that he wanted to be that number one option. I'm not saying he's going to be the number one scoring option for Team USA. But you got to admit, they looked a little bit different once he got on the floor after being down, I think it was 10 or 11-1 early on in that game. So he's going to be a guy you want to watch it for. Maybe you swap on him for Devin Booker. But listen, Steph's going to start. We know that. LeBron's going to start. You know, we know that. Probably Embiid's going to start because they just recruited the you-know-what out of him, right? So now it's down to those two spots. I think eventually we're going to settle on Durant, and we're going to probably settle on Ant Edwards. But don't mistake it. If we play a team like France that's really big, you may have to go big, which may have to go like AD, Embiid at the 4 or 5 to match up with something like Gobert and Wembanyama.
K KD did not play last night dealing with a strained calf. He should be ready for the Paris Olympic Games. JY, just one game in a five-game exhibition series, but against the team that has the second-best price to win a gold medal, the Americans, despite a sloppy opening quarter, won by 14. Does yesterday do anything in your mind to show just how in front Team USA is? I mean, we're close to a $5 odds-on favorite anyway.
Yeah, they really are, Ben, because here's the thing, and I just said it in the beginning of the segment. If they defend like this, Ben, there's no one in the world that's going to beat them in a basketball game.
Total was 200 and a hook last night for the exhibition game. We stayed well under that with a total of 155. We're back on the early line around the WNBA next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Camp day yesterday in the W, a five-game slate where all five games tipped by noon local time in their respective cities and at those venues. What a day it was. Five games in the WNBA, and it started, JY, at 11 a.m. Eastern time in Connecticut between the top two teams in the W, the New York Liberty, the Connecticut Sun, who both entered yesterday 17-4, battling for that top spot at the top of the table that now belongs to the Liberty. 71-68, the victory for New York. They even cover as a slight 2.5-point road favorite in Connecticut. A total of 158.5 stays under. How big of a win was that for New York to take that number one spot in the WNBA?
It was a great spot. Really quick, folks, shout out to the WNBA. We do this in women's college basketball as well. We call it a school day game, where you get a lot of young kids that don't have the opportunity to go watch the college basketball. Shout out to the WNBA for taking a day and doing that across the country. Now, when you look at the game in Uncasville, Connecticut, 71-68, what was amazing to me, Ben, is a team in the New York Liberty, arguably the best offensive team metric-wise in the WNBA, won a game playing a completely different way. Half court, didn't shoot the ball well, and locked down defensively. They shot 3 of 13 from three. That is god awful. But when you have, you know, Brianna Stewart dominating with 14 rebounds, Jonquel Jones giving you 11 rebounds, they lose the rebounding battle by two. But to me, the biggest play, the play of Sabrina Ionescu. Big bucket down stretch, up by one to put them up of three, and then the game ceiling block. We talk about this big three or big four, if you want to call Vanderslot, or even a starting five, if you talk about Benaja Laney Hamilton, that did not play yesterday. They showed last night, Ben, I thought for the first time, an ability to win a grinded out game where they can't score offensively. You know it, I know it, Ben. We both watch a lot of W. It takes defense, especially in the playoff, to win games. That's how the Liberty won it. And they now not only have a one-game lead in the standings, but they've won both matchups versus the Sun, both in Connecticut, which means the next two games to end the regular season happen in New York. Next game, I do believe, is next week.
How about that? 18 wins now for the Liberty. And that was a game that was showcasing the two best teams right now in the regular season. If we segue over to the West Coast here, a team that we might think is going to be the best team come playoff time, that's going to be the Aces. Now sit at 14-7 after their victory over the Storm, 84-79, which saw Asia Wilson, coach, 24-20 yesterday. Best player in the WNBA, the Aces rounding into form. What are we thinking about the Aces' performance yesterday?
I mean, she had a 24-20 game, and she shot under 50% from the floor. Like, that's the wildest thing. Guys, this could have been 30-20 that she could have had last night. But here's what I love. Not just the 20 rebounds, right? But the fact that she had the four blocks, the three steals, the two assists, and guys, zero turnovers in 35 minutes. That is just a team. When she plays like this, it is phenomenal, but we keep going back to it, and Ben always calls her the right name, the point god. I know they lost the game last week, but ever since Chelsea Gray has come back, they have just rounded into form. They're in their right spots, and as much as Asia Wilson is playing well, played phenomenal, and is the best player in the world, hands down, it really, to me, has unlocked Jackie Young, where she could go worry about scoring more, and then they could put Kelsey Plum at the three-point line. Jackie Young, high score yesterday besides Jewel Loyd, 27 points, 10 of 19 for four, and missed. Five of her misses were from three. She didn't even shoot the ball great either. But you said it best. They may not be the best team by record, but they are the defending champions. They are the best team in the WNBA, and they're still properly priced as a favorite to win the WNBA championship.
Chelsea Gray did not play in the first 12 games of this season for Las Vegas after they won two consecutive WNBA titles. They had lost three straight, a three-game skid for the first time since the 2019 season, which just makes you laugh when you think about it. They had dropped 4 of 5 before Chelsea Gray returned on the bench. She's now back in the starting five for Becky Hammon, and you can see the dividends. Jackie Young, the leading scorer, 27 points yesterday, despite a 20-and-20 game, 24 points and 20 boards for Asia Wilson. JY, you saw the odds there as it pertains to the standings. The Aces have won 8 of the 9 games with Gray back in the lineup, 14-7, but still the fourth best record in the WNBA. When you look at the top five, I'm not going to ask you about the tier of two, plus 145, the Aces, the favorites, or the Liberty, the second best number, plus 170, to have a WNBA Finals rematch from a season ago. This is my question. Can all five of those teams legitimately be in contention for a WNBA title, or is it still just the two in front of everybody else?
No, I think you got to look at least the team, the group of four, right? So I'm going to throw Minnesota in there, who has won the Commissioner's Cup, who has 2 wins over New York Liberty already, 1 on the road, 1 at home. Connecticut defends like no one's business. Ben, you know it, I know it. Their problem is they don't shoot the ball well enough from three, but they will get you in a dogfight. They will muck it up, and they will play the game their way. Seattle is intriguing because of the ability to score of Jewel Loyd, Megan Burr, Awumake, Skylar Diggins-Smith. They have players as well. The team that I still think is lying in the weeds that could give a team a scare in the playoffs, it's Phoenix. Because of Brittany Griner's size inside, the shot-making creativity of Kalia Copper, and obviously the all-around game of Diana Taurasi, Natasha Cloud also as well. That team is dangerous as well, but it is amazing, Ben, because I think there's more parity to the league this year. There's more teams that are going to be involved in the race, and I think it's going to make it exciting, especially if the semifinals are the Liberty and the Aces. I think the WNBA needs the Aces to jump one of those spots.
Listen, last year, by the time we got into the second half of the season, where we are now, we're well past 20 games for all teams around the WNBA in the 40-game regular season. Of course, All-Star break on the horizon, the Olympic break on the horizon. But by the time we got to the second half last year, it was the Aces, it was the Liberty, and everybody else had a 12-to-1 number or higher. You saw those five teams there, all at plus 950 or shorter, should be more balanced. 6 teams with a winning record, including Phoenix, now 12-10. Kalia Copper, huge game yesterday. The Mercury putting up the century mark in a win against Dallas. Now to the teams in 7th and 8th. And the two rookies, the debate up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The two rookies in the heat of the WNBA Rookie of the Year debate and the odds race on display yesterday on Camp Day in the WNBA. Indiana's Caitlin Clark, Chicago's Angel Reese, both adding historic performances yet again on a Wednesday afternoon. We start with the game in Indianapolis. We'll get to Caitlin Clark's stat line in just a moment, but for a Fever team, JY, that entered winners of 6 of their last 9 and play much better basketball as a 7-point home favorite against one of the worst teams in the W, the Washington Mystics, to lose on your home floor by 5, 89-84, despite a rally attempt in the fourth and final quarter, not necessarily a good sight. How bad of a loss was this for the Fever yesterday?
It was a bad loss, and let's be honest, Ben, they did not look like a team that was ready to play, a team that was down by 14 points at the break, down almost 20 after 3, and it took a feverish rally in the fourth quarter just to make it a game, and a team that has struggled on the defensive end of the floor, giving up 89 points in the game last night. That's not something you want to do, giving up 51 points in the first half. That's not the effort that you, Christy Sides and that team needs to have if they're want to be taken seriously as a team that could make a playoff run. Now, I will say this. They're one of the worst teams in the WNBA, the Mystics. But do know, folks, after going 0-12 to start the year, this team is 6-5 in their last 11 games. They have given teams some tough games. I know a New York Liberty game, I think that they were close in. They only lost at Minnesota by 7. So they took the Sun to overtime. So Coach Thibault's team is playing much better basketball. But still, Ben, after the way that Fever team won against the Liberty over weekend, that is not a good look at home, 7.4 favorite, to turn around and lose a game to the Mystics.
Mm-hmm. Should have won that game. The Fever now sitting on the season with 9 wins. You know, another team with 9 wins right now after picking up a W yesterday. That's the Sky. They win 78-69 over the Dream, which included Angel Reese getting 11 points, 13 rebounds, and 3 steals to keep that double-double streak alive. But, Coach, not without some controversy here.
Yeah. Well, I'm calling conspiracy theory. I'm going into the Donnie Wrightside playbook.
Do it.
And it's simply put, folks, back in the day, there was a football game. Aaron Rodgers going back to pass. Michael Strahan needed a sack to break the all-time record of Brett Favre. See, I got the team right. It was Brett Favre. Right. And what he should have rolled out left, he rolled out right. And here he is, sack, and he gets the record. So now we look at Angel Reese. And, folks, very simply put, I don't care what anybody says. If you're up 7 with under 7 seconds to play, why are you calling for the ball? Like, the game is over. What do you need the ball for? Oh, I know. You got 9 points. But what do you need? You need someone from the other team to step up to the plate and help you. Her name? Tina Charles, come on down to the congregation because you're in this too. You foul her, and then you go to the line, and everybody's happy. And everybody's saying, oh, what about Caitlin Clark and the coach left her in? No. These are not the same. 7-point lead, 6 seconds left, game is over. If you get in a ball, don't touch her. It's stat padding, and I don't care what anybody says about it.
It's really not a conspiracy theory. It was as clear as day to see what was happening. Kennedy Carter had the ball in her possession under 10 seconds left, was going to dribble out the clock when Marina Mabry came down the floor for Chicago, called for it, throws it into Angel Reese. She is fouled with 6 seconds. Tina Charles kind of ducked out of there, the veteran that likes to help out the young rooks in the WNBA. One of her teammates on Atlanta put her arms up at the refs like, what are you blowing the whistle for in a game where we're down by 7 with 6 seconds left? To Angel Reese's credit, she had to hit both free throws, and she did. I don't think it diminishes her 13-game record double-double streak now at 14, but it does allow you to poke some holes in how this record came to be. Caitlin Clark yesterday, 29 points, 13 boards, or 13 assists rather, 5 made threes, 5 boards, 5 steals, 3 blocks, the only stat line we have ever seen in the history of the WNBA or the NBA to put up those kind of numbers. Now a stronger favorite, JY, at minus 850 to win Rookie of the Year. Do you agree with the odds movement here in the final 30 seconds of this segment?
To quote the famous WWF manager Slick, turn out the lights, the party's over. It's done. Caitlin Clark, Rookie of the Year.
Wow. That's where we stand right now. Many might debate that statement, but JY, we appreciate it. A fade away to the break for JY. More in the early line up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
What a day it was out in Sin City in Las Vegas. We had the USA Showcase, the nightcap in men's basketball against Team Canada, and day number 2 of Big 12 Media Days. Day number 1 of Mountain West Media Days, and After hours with the Pac-12, the Beavs and the Cougs of Oregon State and Washington State. So much to get to here in this collegiate capsule where we look at Donnie Wrightside's favorite stop on the sports calendar. That's media days around the nation in college football. Of course, one of the highlights yesterday on day number two of Big 12 media days at Allegiant Stadium, the home of the Las Vegas Raiders in Sin City. Deion Sanders, year number two of the prime era in Boulder, just about to begin. And Deion Sanders, DRS, at the podium yesterday, was asked about his expectations for the season and how he is judged and the success level that Colorado is judged by in college football as well.
Yes. I'm judged on a different scale. My wins are totally different than your wins. Your wins, you just judging football. That's why I have to start out and give you education and academics and so forth. I have to give you those things so you understand there's a greater scope. I can't win 9 games and our GPA suffers. Our GPA can't be high, but we lose another 8 games. We can't not go and grab high school players, and you got a bunch of guys in the portal, out of the portal that's getting incarcerated. My wins are different. We have to win in every area. That's the way we're judged. And I'm cool with that because we come a little different.
Tony, I don't actually disagree with what Deion Sanders is saying. With all the attention and notoriety that is paid to this Buffs football program, each and every individual win is not just a win for a college football team to start off a season. It adds on a layer of significance because it generates national conversation. What are your reactions to what Deion Sanders had to say yesterday at Big 12 Media Day?
Yeah. I mean, he is a media guy. He's always been in the media, one of the best football players we've ever seen on the field, and he sort of brings that attention to himself. Now, also coupled with the fact where when they got to Colorado, talking about Deion's team, and that includes a lot of videographers, they made it a point. We're going to put this like a reality show. So, of course, they're going to judge you different than other teams at this point because we see more about Colorado, and you make it a point to go on talk shows and to fly around the country and go on pregame shows to talk up your program. That's why he's making so much money. That's why Colorado is sold out every single game, even if the results aren't measuring up. But no, nobody cares about GPA across any other football team anymore at this point here. So I think what he's basically saying is, I got a good football team and my team stunk before I got there. I got a couple wins. A lot of people would be praised for how many wins they got at Colorado, but I'm not doing that. But also, when you be, and sometimes we don't do any service here. If you would have said, okay, we honestly know what TCU will be by the end of the season, maybe it wasn't such a big win opening weekend, which put Colorado on that pedestal to begin with, when maybe they didn't really beat a great football team at that time. But it's college football. You can't complain about being in the spotlight when you want to be in the spotlight.
And I think that's the key, right? Deion Sanders, the guy that was the most exaggerated individual from the very start of his NFL career. Yeah. Dress good, feel good, play good. That's who he has always been. He understands how to use the media attention. And he himself, Prime, makes no bones about it. As you heard there, he's not running from the attention. He understands it. He is cool with it. I commend Deion Sanders for what he has done. I think it's the overall organization, though, right? Because you can talk the talk, but then you got to walk the walk. Shedeur Sanders, his son and his quarterback, meeting with some media members yesterday, was asked about the level of notoriety in rising to the occasion. And Shedeur said, "We're everybody's Super Bowl." Well, you can't be everybody's Super Bowl and lose 8 Super Bowls then. You can't talk all the smack that you do and not deliver. But that's the fascinating thing to me, DRS, about CU. In the final year of Carl Durrell, before Deion Sanders became the head coach in Boulder, Colorado was the worst FBS football program, certainly at the Power 5 level. They won a single game. They were 1-11. So a 4-8 record the following year after a ton of roster turnover should only be seen as improvement and success. But with how Colorado did it, it does leave a little bit to be desired. They won their first three games of the year. They were the entirety of the conversation in September last year in college football. They got beat big by Oregon in week number four. They lost to USC in a high-scoring affair the following week. They won their first game of October against ASU and never won again. A 4-2 start quickly became a disappointing 4-8 season. So now we talk about the Buffs in 2024. 5.5 is the win total. The over has the hefty juice at minus 158. If the odds makers are correct, DRS, that's bowl eligibility for a second-year head coach that had a huge elevation to the FBS and Power Conference level, now in the Big 12 in a team that just two seasons ago won only a single game. That should be deemed success. But in your estimation, is six wins in a bowl appearance enough to satisfy that thirst in Boulder?
It should be this year because, and again, I don't get into the roster construction of what they have going forward next year. But the one thing I do know is they have a quarterback that's projected to be in the first round and in the upper part of that first round. And if you have a 5.5 win total, you should automatically get that with one of the best players in the country here. But having said that, there's a lot of turmoil on this team, and it doesn't necessarily come from Deion himself. There's a lot of roster turnover from guys getting out of the portal, in the portal, and also there's a lot of coaching turnover from last year, what we saw into this year. That usually turns out the same. And when you're trying to take a look at the games that you play, as Deion joked about, and he's actually right about this, hey, AD, you're supposed to give me a layup in game number one at home. NDSU is not a layup at home as they're going to start that season. Now, granted, I do pick on the Big 12 because I don't think it's a great football conference overall. But when you look at that schedule, like there's decent opponent after decent opponent after decent opponent. So my first instincts would say, of course, they should get six wins. Then I look at that schedule and say, well, I actually don't know where the six wins come from here at this point. So for me, again, you have a quarterback that's supposed to be an upper-level NFL talent here. You should win six games. But then I look at the schedule and say, I don't know if six wins are on there. But then again, I'm not saying, hey, look, I really went through with a fine-tooth comb this schedule and also the team players that they have that are going to be playing next year. Yes, they should land at seven. This is going to be a tough season for him. And if they do make a bowl, that's going to be well-deserved.
Absolutely so. But with the attention that Colorado brings, I wonder how we judge success, thus going to Deion's point that a win is not just simply a win. I couldn't agree more. Shador Sanders, 40-1 to win the Heisman Trophy, thought by many to be a top five, top 10 pick next year in the NFL draft. Travis Hunter, the best two-way player in college football, maybe the only two-way player in college football, 65-1 to win the Heisman Trophy, probably a top 10 pick in the 2025 NFL draft as well. Baylor's Dave Aranda yesterday at Big 12 Media Days as well. Baylor's been on a recent successful run in recruiting. And when Aranda was asked why, he said it was pretty simple. We're paying players. I love Dave Aranda's candor. What say you, Donnie?
It's fantastic. And Ben, you know me. I always say, just be real with us here. Don't say we outworked everybody. He made a point like, yes, I'm a good football coach. I'm a good recruiter. But what's the difference? I can walk into somebody's home and say, I'll give you $350,000 to come be my right guard. That is going to help. If you remember back in the day, right, Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze, how the heck did Ole Miss suddenly become the best recruiting power? Hugh Freeze lied and goes, we just outworked every SEC team. No, you paid everybody more money than everybody else in the SEC. I love when coaches give candor and honesty. Thank you, Dave Aranda. Love to see it.
It certainly was the case. Then late night in Sin City, the remaining Pac-2,
I mean, come
Washington
on
State and Oregon State, throwing after hours with the Beavs and Cougs that featured an open bar because, as new commissioner Teresa Gold had to say, if anybody deserves a drink, it's the Pac-12. Donnie loves it. Wish he could have been there. MLB News next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Our man Jack. Jack McMullen is here on this Thursday morning on the early line on Sports Grid to go all around Major League Baseball, doing great work, of course, with Just Baseball Media, the play-by-play voice of the Indianapolis Indians, the AAA affiliate of the Pittsburgh Pirates, is here live on this Thursday on TEL. Jack, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you for being here on the Sports Grid Network.
You bet, man. I love coming on with you guys. This is we're in the good part of Major League Baseball, right? Where you start to get the wild card teams separating each other. I know that 2 weeks ago, all the conversation in the National League was about parity, and everybody gets 4 days off except for the ones that are really, really good. So that's probably a good thing for all these teams that are in the hunt.
The All-Star break comes at the conclusion of a full-day slate on Sunday. And who might that National League starter be for the All-Star game? Could it be a guy that Jack McMullen has called a game for? Paul Skene's day number 11 in the history of Major League Baseball. We'll look at that in just a little bit. But, Jack, we look back first on yesterday's action around a robust Wednesday slate in MLB. The marquee matchup in these midweek sets, that's out in Philadelphia between the top two teams in the National League, the Philadelphia Phillies and the L.A. Dodgers. The Phils edge out L.A. for a second consecutive day, 4-3 victory in Game 2. Philly has won both of the opening two games of this set. Jack, how much stock do you put into the fact that Philadelphia has taken the first two from L.A.?
A lot, frankly, and I think they won it in the Philly way yesterday, where they had the speed demons show themselves on the base paths, like, you know, Trey Turner legs out, you know, a tough ground ball to Miguel Rojas, and that brings in Whit Merrifield, and like, Schwarber went yard. It was a leadoff home run from Schwarber, and then they played enough small ball to win that game. I think the most underrated pitcher in baseball is Christopher Sanchez with the Philadelphia Phillies, and Sanchez absolutely proved that yesterday. I thought Christopher Sanchez deserved to be an all-star. He just got extended. Now, you think extended means you got a ton of money. Listen, he got good money, but relatively speaking, they got a deal on Sanchez. He'll make about $5 million a year for the next 5 years. So he is flying under the radar, and that guy has been such a calming presence at the back of that rotation. And yeah, it's a rotation that features Wheeler and Nola, and it's a rotation that has Ranger Suarez, who is going to Arlington to be a National League All-Star. But they are not where they are without Christopher Sanchez. The offense did enough, and he gave them an excellent start yesterday. I think this means the world for Philly, showing that they can do that against a lineup with Shohei Ohtani and Freddie Freeman. I know no Mookie Betts, but they're good, man. They're really good.
Hitting weather yesterday in Philadelphia for sure, and Sanchez was great, as he's been all year, particularly in a great hitter's ballpark at Citizens Bank Park. Jack, if we take a look at the comparisons between the Phillies and the Dodgers, what's one thing we know? Superstars on both sides. A great 1-9 lineup for the Dodgers. Same thing with the Philadelphia Phillies. Solid bullpens on both sides, but when we really see what wins in the playoffs, it's that frontline pitching, and it appears the Phillies have it right now and the Dodgers don't. So my question to you is, we're coming up on that trade deadline by the end of the month. Are the Dodgers probably going to be on the prowl for at least a true number two starter here?
I think their IL rotation, their injured list rotation, is one of the better rotations in all of baseball.
It is.
I was saying that at the beginning of the year with Tampa, too, when you had McClanahan and Rasmussen and Springs and Boz all on the IL and Taj Bradley on the IL. And I was like, that IL rotation is a top five rotation in baseball. I think the Dodgers IL rotation is a top five rotation in baseball. Not to mention they just optioned Bobby Miller, who just like hasn't looked right. We know Bobby Miller is better than this, but they optioned him yesterday. I do think that they will be on the market for a guy. I think Jack Flaherty makes too much sense for the LA Dodgers, considering, you know, he's what, $14 million this year. So the team that acquires him will owe him about $5.5-6 million, and he's up after this year. So I think that Flaherty is the perfect fit. I think they look for a rental, though, because you do have Emmett Sheehan coming back at some point next year. Dustin May should be ready to go for next year, and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Yeah. And, oh, by the way, Shohei Ohtani pitches, too. He'll be ready to go. Donnie, I do want to add one more thing. You mentioned it's the pitching that really gets you over the top. You also have to have a murderer's row in the bullpen. And the Phillies have a murderer's row in the bullpen. And that was the thing that jumped out to me. They put their winning assortment out yesterday in Kirkering, Alvarado, Strom, and Hoffman. And they got it done behind Christopher Sanchez. the Phillies are built to win this whole thing, and the Dodgers are a couple moves away from being there.
Plus 165, the price on LA. The Dodgers remain the favorites, but after the Phillies have taken the opening two games of this set, really it was the 10-1 thrashing on Tuesday night. The Phillies have shortened that gap, plus 220, second best price. Let's turn our attention now to the American League, where the AL pennant favorites remain the New York Yankees. A big win yesterday, 2-1 in the Trop to stop some of the bleeding. The Yanks entered yesterday losers of 16 of their last 21. In the last month, Jack, when you look at where the Yankees were and where they are now, on June 11th, 47-21, a hefty odds-on favorite to win the American League East, a two-game lead over the Orioles. The win yesterday, an O's loss to the Cubs. The Yankees now trailing by two games atop the division, and in the last month since June 11th to where we are here on July 11th, a 9-17 record for the Pinstripes. Just how concerned are you about the Yankees for the remainder of this season?
Depends where you set the goalposts. I think if you told me that, hey, the Yankees are the best team in baseball, your thoughts, I would say, I disagree. I'm very concerned about that sentiment. The Yankees are one of the favorites in the American League. I'm totally with you. They have Gerrit Cole. I know Gerrit Cole has struggled since coming back. He's the best pitcher on the planet. Like, give him some time to get his feet back under him. Marcus Stroman, he worked around some traffic yesterday, but I thought he threw, you know, somewhat well. But the lineup, man, like, take a look at this lineup and just go one by one through OPS. Judge is Judge. Soto is Soto. In yesterday's lineup, and I know that they won 2-1, the only guy with an OPS above league average outside of Judge and Soto was Ben Rice, who's played like 10 games in his major league career. League average OPS in Major League Baseball is 704. Everybody else, six of the nine guys, were under 700. That lineup can't win a World Series right now, man.
Yeah, Trent Grisham, the guy that delivered yesterday with both RBIs, is batting 176 this year. More with Jack on the other side of the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The tradition lives on here on this Thursday on the early line on Sports Grid. It is Skeens Day number 11 in the history of Major League Baseball. And who better to break down a Paul Skeens start than the guy that called multiple of them at the AAA level in Indianapolis? That is Jack McMullen. Jack, we appreciate you joining us here once again for a second straight segment on the early line on Sports Grid. Interesting set so far in the midweek between the Buccos and the Brewers in Milwaukee. Pittsburgh won the first game 12-2. Milwaukee responded in a big way yesterday. Day baseball in the state of Wisconsin for Skeens Day number 11 in Roman numerals. That's XI. In the Pirates, a road favorite in Milwaukee. What can we expect out of Paul Skeens today against the Brewers?
What are you expecting other than utter domination, which is what he's given you in his first 10 major league starts? There was a stretch of two straight starts where he allowed a leadoff homer, and that was it. Like, he is pound for pound, I think, the best pitcher in Major League Baseball right now. He's the most talented pitcher in Major League Baseball, and the fact that he has pitchability to go along with that is insane. I know record doesn't really matter, but he's 5-0 in his first 10 starts. That tells you that his presence alone gets the offense fired up, and they give him enough. Now, he does have 5-0 decisions, but he's not getting beaten, and chances are the Pirates are leveling up for him. This guy is absolutely amazing, and I think I've told you guys before, every day before his start, every pre-start meal is chicken Alfredo for him. Day games are a little weird because instead of a socially acceptable time to eat chicken Alfredo for a 7 p.m. have my chicken Alfredo at 2:30. He's having it at 9, and he's not going to adjust, because why would you adjust when you're pound for pound the best pitcher on the planet right now?
he's been tremendous. And if you include him in Major League Baseball over the past 60 days with other pitchers, like the numbers I love, the xFIP minus number, a 59, which is sensational. We see the ERA at a 2.12, the xFIP number at a 2.34. He has been tremendous, which brings me to my next point here. You take a look at him for the NL Rookie of the Year as a minus 350 price, Cy Young at a 50-1 price. We know the Pittsburgh Pirates probably aren't going to factor into the postseason this year. Give me the thought process, Jack, heading down the stretch where you know he might be involved in the Cy Young Award. He obviously is going to be involved in the Rookie of the Year. Do the Pittsburgh Pirates let him go, or do you say, look, we're worried about your career here, the innings on your arm, let's get to the offseason? How does it play out in Pittsburgh in your mind this year?
I think they did a lot of proactive planning, and you saw him heavily protected in AAA when he was throwing. Like his season debut, he went three innings, and it was nine up, nine down. I think it was five punchouts, but like he wasn't going past the nine hitter in that. He was going to see a lineup first time through, and that was it. He was working on 5 days rest, unlike the typical, you know, 4 day rest schedule at the major league level. He's gone on 5 days rest more often than on 4 days rest at the big league level to this point as well. I think they've done a really good job of proactively kind of delaying him out of the starting gate. Their other guy, Jared Jones, I mean, like they're kind of suspension bridging him right now. And I know that he just hit the IL, but I mean, this kind of works seamlessly with an innings limitation that they may have had. It's unfortunate that, you know, the IL needed to be involved there, but, you know, hoping that he feels healthy very soon. But they probably would have scaled him back, you know, close to right now because he's tracking to blow by his career high in innings. There are a bunch of guys like that. There are a bunch of young starters like that in Major League Baseball. I think you may see a couple of abbreviated turns from Skeens in August, but in September, like, don't expect Skeens to be sitting out to start. He's going to start games in September.
Jack, I'm going to ask you two questions. First, very quick, I just want a one-word answer, and then secondly, on the 2024 MLB draft. First question on Paul Skeens. Is he going to be the National League starter for the All-Star game on Tuesday in Arlington?
You can't do this to me. No. No.
Jack DeMore doesn't even believe in his guys. That's what we're going to clip.
Send it right to him.
I believe in my guys. I believe in seniority as well. Chris Sale's been really good. I believe in seniority.
Okay. Fair enough. Secondly, Sunday night, 2024 MLB draft. Travis Bezzana out of Oregon State, the Australian who batted 407 this year for the Beavs, is the odds-on favorite to go first overall. Do you agree?
No, I don't. Aram Layton, who's my co-host at Just Baseball, put together a mock draft, and I think he made a perfect point that this could turn into a money game. They have $10.5 million to play with as the slot value for 1-1. J.J. Weatherholt may be under slot. J.J. Weatherholt, the shortstop second baseman out of West Virginia, aiming to watch.
Jack McMullen, as always, thank you. More TEL next.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.